Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John Mark Grodi, here on EWTN. And once again, we have this great privilege to come together, share a cup of coffee, and hear a story, a conversion story, you know, another way that the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ has played out in the lives of his children. We're joined tonight by Kailash and Lily Duraswamy. Lily was a former agnostic and Kailash was a former Hindu and atheist. A lot of neat story ahead of us, but thank you both for being here today and for sharing your story. Yeah. It's wonderful to meet you. And we have talked, I think about a year ago, we got to talk and meet a little bit, but a lot's happened since then. You two have been married. That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Yeah. Just got married. And I have to thank you and your father for this program, because online content and the stories that you guys shared here was extremely pivotal for my journey. And it's so important to move beyond apologetics, like we've kind of talked about, mm-hmm. and really inspect how people choose to become Catholic Christians. Yeah. And the stories that were shared here were very impactful for me, and I'm extremely glad to, I hope in some way, encourage someone else to join the church. So thank Amen. You for having me, and my wife as well, who joined the church as an adult.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to hear more of that, but thank you for that encouragement. And again, thank you to EWTN for those who watch and support EWTN for making it possible. So awesome. Well, let's go way back to the beginning. We'll start with you, Kailash. Where does your spiritual journey begin?
Yeah, my parents are from India. They're from a large city in the southern tip. It's actually the place that St. Thomas the Apostle was martyred, is the city that my family's from. And there's a small state there called Tamil Nadu. And there's a few Christian martyrs actually from there. And so Christianity has been there from the beginning, but it kind of has always been looked at as sort of oppositional to the Hindu values that are there. And that's what I was born and brought up with. I was born in Florida in a small town, but there was a pretty strong Indian community there. And my parents made a lot of point to go to religious functions, and the scriptural tradition was extremely important in my family. I think some people who are Indian, who are born in the United States or in some type of diasporic community like in Europe, they aren't given as much of a formation in the religion. But I was. I actually had both my parents put a lot of emphasis on Hindu philosophy, and Hindu texts were very common in our household and talked about. And I was given a very strong formation in understanding its views towards, you could say something like morality, but in particular, it is a very strong teaching about duty and fulfilling your obligations. And that was extremely important as in my upbringing, my spiritual journey growing up. And I was the president of the Hindu Students Association in my college. It was a super important part of my identity. And it formed the way I thought. And, you know, the concept of God is different for sure. But, you know, I was disciplined in some type of approach and some type of relationship with God, you know, mm-hmm. and it formed a lot of my habits. And that was my spiritual upbringing. Right. But unfortunately, the other reality is that I, like many people who grow up in the United States, teenagers, whatever, I had a lot of desire to fit in with my peers, and a lot of what motivated me was, alcohol, partying, and I really fell away from any kind of morality. And increasingly, I just kind of went into whatever I thought would make me happy. So I fell away from spirituality at all, and I became an atheist. And so after I graduated college, I moved to San Francisco, and I was a software engineer, have a career in the technology space, and increasingly read books by people like Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins. And I believed that science had every answer for what we wondered, and that religion or relationship with God, not just Christianity, but any thought about a transcendent truth, was a fiction that human beings invented in order to paper over ignorance that they had. That science, as we've grown away from history, whatever it is, as we go through time, that we found ourselves now in this advent of the computer age, the advent of the information age, that the pursuit of knowledge that we can acquire through these instrumentations and whatever else we have now, it allowed us to discern the truth in a way superior to those who came before us. I completely believed that.
Right.
That the truth that we sought, the answers that we wanted, if we didn't have them in science now, would come through science. Science, whatever that means.
Right, right, right.
And
gets thrown around a lot. That
right. What is what actually is science?
Yeah.
But that's where I was, and that's sort of where I would call myself an atheist.
Gotcha.
That I didn't need an explanation for what I believed beyond some type of scientific text or what was told to me there.
Yeah, and certainly that's something that many people are familiar with. You know that. But it's really a faith, right? It's trading one faith for another. This faith that science will have all those answers. Right. Well, let's if we could, Lily, what was your background?
Yeah, so I'm Chinese, and I was actually born in China.
Okay.
And I immigrated to America when I was just 1 month old. So my parents were immigrants, and so we lived in L.A. And actually, my first memory of the church was actually going to a Protestant church. My mom thought like, oh, free daycare. We could drop them off at Vacation Bible School.
Yeah.
And, I was just with other kids, watching VeggieTales and having fun, And that was really my experience. But my parents were, I would say, culturally Buddhist. But if you ask them what Buddhism actually is, they would not know what it meant.
Right.
So it was just kind of like, sometimes they would go to a temple, sometimes not. So I would consider them really not. And so that's kind of like a little bit about that background.
Sure.
And growing up, I had a lot of trouble making friends. Like, I felt like very unloved. I felt like, is there something wrong with me? Like, why is this so difficult? And so there's that. And I was a kid who was like so slow to learn anything. I would take an extra math class every summer to just get ahead of, just to feel like I was normal. And I just remember growing up, I wanted to learn how to swim. I've had so many swimming teachers and they all have given up on me. And I just thought like, wow, I just go to swimming class and they just think like, well, she just doesn't know how to swim. We'll just have her, be on the sidelines. And I just thought like, wow, like there's a lot of frustration or lack of patience with just like who I was, and I just thought there must be something more to this, like I believe there was a God, but is this what I'm supposed to be, like how I'm supposed to be living in this world? So that's kind of like my contemplation of like who I was.
Yeah So you had a sense of God. As you grew up more, again, we noted at the beginning that you were sort of an agnostic. So that obviously there was some uncertainty in terms of who God was and what mm-hmm. he meant in terms of your knowledge of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think like, I went to Protestant church here and there, throughout high school. And for some reason, I couldn't feel that this was the truth too. Because I just remember we would go to like, my mom would take us to like Bible study, and I would go to Bible study and go to Sunday service. And there's many instances where I actually often question their teaching of like, oh yeah, you just have to believe and that's it, And I always wonder like, when the pastors and everyone would like ask people to like, hey, does anyone want to volunteer? No one would raise their hand. They're like, well, I believe and that's it. And I think I was like, there's something missing here. There's right. like a depth that's like not really there. And I couldn't put any word to it. I just felt like something's a little off.
Yeah.
And I remember going to a high school retreat. And, it's very spirit filled. You're with all these other high schoolers. And you're like, wow, this is exciting. We go to this beach house. And when we arrived there, there's already so much drama with all the high schoolers. And at that point in my life, I was like, wow, people are talking behind each other's backs and all that. Mind you, like, these are the first Christians that I'd ever encountered. And I thought like, wow, like, I feel like I don't want to be like them. Like, I feel that would be like hypocritical. Like, maybe I just have to be very, very perfect to be Christian. That's what I thought. Like, you know, in order to, like, not, like, taint Jesus' name, like, I'm not really sure. So maybe I just need to take, you know, an additional time, a class, or whatever it is to even, like, get to know this for sure. Because I couldn't proclaim that he was my savior yet at that point.
Yeah. Okay, beautiful. Interesting. Yeah. So the again, what I think of with both the stories too is this question of does this picture, does my hermeneutic key, right, how I approach truth, how I approach religion, does it fit, you know, what I see in the universe, in the world? Does it fit my human person? And sometimes we're trying to fit the shoe and it doesn't quite fit yet. We know that something's off, that we're still searching, right, for the fullness there. So, well, what's next? You want to continue on from your story, Kailash?
Yeah, I think spot from there? I think that a really important part is what my life was like personally, you know? And I had always been someone who had a lot of friends. I was homecoming king in my high school. I mean, I was driven a lot by popularity, you know, and fitting in and trying to be someone who was admired basically for worldly reasons. I didn't have that kind of vocabulary. But what motivated me in my career, what motivated me in my social experiences was how can I appear cool, basically, you know? And I think that that's something we all face a temptation to in some way or another if we don't have a foundation of what we believe. Yeah. And my life in high school, like I said, was, you know, drinking a lot and breaking a lot of rules. I was fortunate God made me in a way that I was gifted, that I could do well in school still and like actually get through and, you know, get to a career and do these kinds of things. But it was incidental by, you know, any means. Like it was not something that I put a lot of effort to. I didn't have discipline. I didn't really care about anything except having fun. And that was a challenge in high school, but you know, you're with your parents and there's some structure that prevents you from really going crazy. But as I became a professional, like I said, I moved to San Francisco and I started to make more money and I started to have a greater foundation of my independence in my life. That's when things really started to go crazy. And I, you know, whatever I could do to have fun, I did. And it was a lot of drug use and a lot of out of control partying and a lot of really destructive relationships with romantic partners. It was crazy. I mean, I can't even, it's hard for me to look back because there was so much I did wrong to myself and I did wrong to others. And it was a constant pursuit of what I thought would make me happy, what I thought would be worthy of admiration in the eyes of the people who are around me, you know? And I've done the most, you know, crazy experience in Las Vegas. I've partied with billionaires in Silicon Valley. I mean, I've done all those things. Mm-hmm. And it was all a pursuit of, the word I might have used was joy, but it was a pursuit of gratification,
yeah,
basically. And it always left me unhappy. Mm-hmm. You know, but I had the agency, whether it was money or the personality or the capacity to just continue to go down this path, right. You know, and I found myself frustrated with the failures I had personally. I started so many different businesses as a trying to be a founder. They all failed. And I was more and more frustrated professionally. And I had many relationships, which all failed. And I was extremely frustrated personally in that way. But I didn't really know or understand that there could be another way.
Right.
You know, like, think about it. I didn't know what sin was. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what temptation was. I didn't know what creation was. I didn't know what human dignity was. I didn't any Christian concept you can imagine to the most fundamental level that motivates your behavior. I didn't know what that was. Mm-hmm. And I was always at risk to any temptation which could be presented to me. I could never say no to a drink. I could never say no to going to party. I can never say no to, you know, going to a club, whatever. I didn't have a framework to do that. Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
Well, and why wouldn't you, right? Again, that ethic, that ethos fit with your worldview.
Yeah, exactly.
Why wouldn't I do these things? Why wouldn't I grab all that I can? If what happiness consists in is simply that,
yeah,
then why wouldn't I do that? But why isn't it making me happy? Right? There's that kind of that dilemma too.
Yeah, and I think yeah, what's difficult for the person who is formed in Christianity, there's a thought like, oh, I'm grabbing this. And we have these words and these vocabulary about temptation, you know, this word, or, you know, satisfaction. You know, these are very Christian Catholic words. When you're in the moment, truly it's darkness, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's not that I was grabbing and I was trying to like climb this ladder. You know, I never thought of it that way. It was, that's being a slave to the devil. Mm. I was a slave, basically. And what that means is anything which is presented to you, you cannot refuse. And it's so easy for the enemy in those moments to just give you any paltry small thing, because you'll say yes and you'll never find any clarity and you'll never find any joy. You'll never find any meaning. You'll never find any direction. And that's really what I was. Yeah. It wasn't that I had this calculated plan that I'm just going to get all I can get because there's nothing else out there. No, it's because the person who hates God knew exactly how to manipulate me. And it was so easy for him.
Yeah.
And it was very easy in a place where you have the money and the agency and you have a world around you in San Francisco, for example, that is completely oriented towards gratification, whatever it is. You push a button in your phone, you get your food. Whatever you want, it's instantly there. And that was something that I couldn't contend with. No human being can their own, which I found out later.
Yeah.
But personally, I was always failing in all these initiatives that I had. And the worst thing about it was the romantic relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, I was always in heartbreak and I was always in turmoil, and it created so much angst. And before I found the church, you know, I was in a relationship with someone. We lived together and it was very toxic and it was extremely difficult and it isolated me from the world. But I didn't know any other way. What else could you do?
Right.
You know, I thought this is what's supposed to make you happy.
Yeah.
You know, I thought you were supposed to go and get married. I thought you were supposed to do these things. That's what the world was presented to me as.
Right.
Right? This is how you're supposed to make your decisions. But for some reason, it didn't work for me.
Right. And looking back, we can kind of see that it's a mercy of God that we continue to be miserable, mm-hmm. right? And that our hearts remain restless. We don't just instantly kind of give in and get comfortable. No, we stay. Our heart hurts because this is not what we were meant for. Even if we're convinced intellectually that it is, we continue to feel this is not it. This can't be all that it is. What direction did your life take, Lily? You know, take us from youth group onward. What happened after that?
Yeah, so I went to college.
Okay.
And I went to a liberal arts school. And it was pretty crazy. You know, the number of Christians was very, very small, you know. And within that group, I so happened to live in a dorm hall with all the Protestant Christians. Hmm. And boy, were they excited to find out that I have had some encounter with the church.
Yeah.
And they spent hours trying to convert me. And I was like, you know what? No, I cannot do this right now. I still don't. I feel like your answers still lack some kind of depth, you know, like, so everyone goes to hell. Like, I'm not really sure about the answer. You know, something still didn't really make sense. But in that school, I met my first Catholic friend. I had never really encountered a Catholic person before. Her name is Melissa. And, you know, she would go to these Bible studies with all the Protestant Christians. And, you know, there was one day I distinctly remember she came back and she was crying. And I was like, what's wrong? And we had two mutual friends who are Protestants who cornered her and flipped through the entire Bible and was like, you're worshiping Mary, worshiping the saints. This is not allowed. And in my confusion, I was angry because I was like, this is not right. And I didn't understand. I was like, they shouldn't be trying to convert you. There's so many atheists at this college. What are they doing? I don't understand. But also, who's Mary? And who are these saints? Like, what are they talking about? I had no clue, you know? And so that was kind of like the starting point for me, I would say, of just like encountering the church.
Right. Yeah, more of the, again, it's interesting too that all through that you sort of had this sense of intellectual honesty, like, you know, you were open to it, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not going to give into this out of peer pressure. You know, I want to understand, but what you were finding, right, wasn't a coherent picture yet.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. You want to continue on from there, or yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like, that's the point I found myself in,
okay.
You know, total darkness. I think she was more curious. Mm-hmm. I think she had an exposure to Christianity. But really, I found myself in total darkness. And I didn't know where to go. I don't think I could admit that I had a challenge. I don't think I could really even admit that I was unhappy. But I could recognize objectively that things were not working out for me, you know? And I was an atheist, like I said. You know, I had no interest in religion. But there were certain things that happened in the world, you know, around me. And they always would pique my interest, you know. Why does this happen? Why does that happen? And the profound moment of change for me was the 2016 presidential election. And living in San Francisco, the election results were repudiated, basically. And I don't think politics are particularly, you know, important. And it's not so much about the results of the election itself. Mm-hmm. But it was unexpected that President Trump won. Mm-hmm. And it was, for me, from my worldview, impossible. Mm-hmm. And I was faced with this reality. And it began this question the next day. I actually was reviewing it for this interview. I remember saying something to my friend, I feel like I'm waking up in a new world. And I had this question on my heart, which was, what else is true that I'm missing? You know, what else in this world is out there that I can't really explain? And I think I was in so much disarray, and I was hungry for some kind of foundation that these were the things which were on my heart, you know?
Yeah.
And God, from a very unexpected reason, he found me, you know? He found me from this question, what else is true that I'm missing?
Right.
You know, and it began with, why do people vote this way?
Yeah.
Or even more generally, what motivates human behavior?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the thinking that people have? Mm-hmm. This other side, you know? Because I knew my side, the Sam Harris scientist kind of materialist explanation for everything. I knew my side, that you could pursue what made you really happy. You could try to do a bunch of businesses. You could try to be king of the world. I mean, I knew that side, but it wasn't working, you know? And I had this fascination with this other side, mm-hmm. which then turned out to be the Christian side. And then I had to do more research, and I had to investigate more. What is Christianity? Think about it. No one had ever witnessed Christianity to me, ever. No one had ever shared it with me, nothing. I found it on my own through programs like this and other online platforms, answering these very basic questions. What is Christianity? Who is Jesus Christ? What is the Bible, right? Is the Bible reliable? Is it something that we can actually learn from? Is it a series of texts that has been corrupted into nonsense, like we hear? Or is it actually faithful with high fidelity to the intentions of the original authors, St. John, St. Luke, St. Mark, etc., St. Paul? These are questions that I asked on my own through online research. And it always kept cascading more and more. Who is Christ? Who is the Bible? What is the Bible? Excuse me. What did Jesus Christ do in his life here on earth? What was the purpose of his ministry? You know? And it kept distilling down to things that I liked. And people right on this program said stuff that I wanted so deeply. They would talk about their conversion, the way their life was like before, and what their life was like after. And I said, that is exactly what I want. Mm. I want to be done with these things which enslave me. I want to be done with these habits that I cannot break. I want to be done with this darkness, but I don't want the Christianity thing.
Right.
You know?
We're going to take a break there, but I wanted to just, again, point out, so at the beginning of Christ's, at the Gospel of Mark, right, Christ's first six words in his public ministry are, be converted and accept the gospel. And one of my favorite writers, Father Thomas Dubé, points out in his book, like, it's kind of an odd formulation. We'd expect it to be flip-flopped, like accept the gospel and then it'll convert you. And he highlights there that what seems to be going on is that there's this initial conversion of like whether or not you're even open to truth, you know, and you can go through your life thinking, oh, I'm a person of truth. And then you realize, oh, wait a minute, I'm not actually open to knowing what's true. And furthermore, I'm not really open to this question of what's happiness really consist of and why am I unhappy? I mean, you mentioned that earlier that you weren't even really open to asking, why am I so miserable? Right.
Yeah.
But you had this spark that makes you, that you know, moves you to this place of, well, you know, what could be true, you know, and what's the what's at the bottom of all this? So we'll pick that back up in a minute, and we'll also hear how, again, what sparked you, Lily, and what opened you up to that that search as well. So we'll be right back. So again, we're joined tonight by Kailash and Lily Duraswamy. Lily is a former agnostic, Kailash former Hindu and atheist, but they're both on this search, this journey that we've been hearing about, and we'll catch the rest of the story here in just a couple minutes. I want to remind you that if you go to chnetwork.org, we've got a whole host of stories over there. We have a newsletter, free newsletter that you can sign up for, and especially if you're someone who is investigating the Catholic Church, we'd love to walk that journey with you. We'd love to pray with you and pray for you. So please send us a note there at chnetwork.org. But we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Kailash and Lily's stories. See you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Kailash and Lily Duraswamy. And we've been hearing your guys' wonderful stories and chatting a little bit before the break about, again, this spark that opens us up at some point in our journey. And this happens to everybody at some point, to really being open to the question of, well, what's true and what is happiness and why am I not happy? What was I made for? You know, all those kind of questions. That's really the initial spark of conversion, is even being open to that at all. Long before we accept the gospel, usually, we're opened up to the search. And that's evident in both your stories. And so I think we'll pick up with you, Lily. You know, you were in college. Bring us, take us forward from there in your journey on the search.
Yeah. So I think in college, I just so happened to have like a lot of Protestant friends in my class. Mind you, there's only 18 people in my actual class, and a lot of other, you know, dorm mates and whatnot. And so I've had some encounter with them. I think the one thing was my Catholic friend, she invited me to Mass for the first time. I was visiting the Bay Area and she was like, why don't you come to Mass? And I was like, okay, I'm a little open to that. I'll try it out. She had 5 minutes to explain to me what the Mass was. I was like, I have no clue what you just said, but okay. And she's like, also the caveat, this is not the prettiest church. We're in the basement of the actual church, because they would do bilingual Mass. So we enter in, there's no stained glass. It's literally fold up chairs. You know, this is what it looks like. And I was like, okay, this is very, very humble church. And I think what I didn't realize that really hit me was actually the priest's homily. And the priest had this homily, he had this analogy of someone going to like a baseball field. You know, he's up to bat, he's going to swing, and he misses. And he tries again. They throw the ball over, he swings, and he misses again. This goes on for like 70 times. He misses each one. And then the priest is like, you know, you never feel that. You just feel like you've failed so many times. I was like, yeah, that's me. You know, I can't swim. I have to take an extra class to get through math. Like, I'm always behind. I always feel like I don't get it, you know? And I feel like I'm not worthy of you know, much, you know? I have a hard time making friends, you know? I feel like I'm always doing something wrong. And the priest hits me with this of like, but you know, God is just, he still loves you. Even though you've made all those mistakes, even though you've failed, even though you've gone through all that, like, he still loves you. He's so patient. You could fail a few more times and he still loves you. And I was like, what is this love? And I like cried the entire mass because I was like, wow, that is very, very profound, you know, to feel like, wow, there is, God can love you in that very deep sense. God can be so patient. He can like not give up on me, like in swimming. The swimming instructors, you know, they were so frustrated. They would like throw me in the water and like do all that. And just for me to, you know, receive that was so profound. Yeah. But yet I felt like I was still not ready. You know, I felt like, okay, maybe I just need to be like perfect. I just need to know what exactly Christianity is all about, you know? And so I kind of went through school like, okay, I don't really have time to really perfect all those things. And a friend gave me this book that was really profound, which is called I Believe in Love, you know, which is a meditation on St. Thérèse of Lisieux's writings. And I remember winter break, I was like, okay, she gave me this book, I'll read it. And in the first few pages, there's this one moment where it's just kind of like, it talks about fear. And I read it, I was like, wow, like, yeah, I feel a lot of fear. Like, you have this fear that you can't go to God. You know, you fear that you would, like, hurt him. You have to be perfect in this sense. And I was like, that's exactly how I feel, you know? And the one part that really hit me in that book was, is this fear that wounds him the most.
Oh,
and wow. I was like, whoa. I was like, all this time, I just thought, you know, I'm protecting God's name. You know, I had to be perfect. I need to know every single thing. I need to take an extra class, all that. And I was like, whoa. That really hit me, that winter break. And I was like, okay, next year, I'm going to go to church every Sunday and just check out every church. I'll just do that basic thing. That was like my New Year's resolution. And I was like, okay, this is going to happen. And I'm going to go on this journey to explore because all these different Christians and Catholics have reached out. And I still wasn't sure, but I'll just try. I remember that first Saturday of that year, I was with my mom. It was just us two. And my mom asked me, what are you doing on Sunday? And I was like, I'm going to go to church. She's like, I'll go with you. And this was such a huge moment. You know, because my mom always said that she was perfect and she didn't need church. And, you know, she, that day, that night, revealed that she was like, hey, Lily, I just want to say I'm not perfect. And I remember crying. I was like, wow, like, it's very difficult for an Asian parent or any parent in general to say that they're not perfect. And I was like, wow, there's something happening here. You know, I just felt like, you know, a profound movement towards that. And I would, every Sunday of that year, 2014, I would go to church with all my different classmates, all the people who have invited me. I was like, let's go to church and explore. So I have met so many denominations, you know, Presbyterians, all that. And it's really interesting journeying through that because I was like, oh, your church is splitting up. Why is that? Aren't you supposed to be together? So I could like kind of understand like, okay, something's off here. Like I would, you know, meet with these people, and there's one that really stood out where we went to the service. There's five TVs. It was like an on-fire pastor. And at communion service, people, you know, they were passing it down. And my classmate brings some of it back to our studio. And I was like, oh, you brought some back. Why? He said, oh, you know, they had extra, so I had it for like an afternoon snack. And I asked my Catholic friends, like, can you actually do that?
Is that okay?
I was like, can you actually, you know, bring it back and have a snack? Because, like, what does it even mean?
Right.
Like, what does the communion even mean if you can just bring it back and have a snack? And she was like, oh, no, no, no. In the Catholic Church, that is completely not allowed. And I think that was like my first introduction to like even the Eucharist. And this journey of like, oh, wow. So God can come in that form, like, and like you can receive him. That was just like, I was just really fascinated. So like my friend would actually like, she was learning how to defend her faith because like, and I was asking all these questions, like, yeah. Who's Mary? Who's saints? What is this Eucharist thing, you know? So it was, like, really beautiful journey of, like, us going back and forth. And, like, I would ask these questions, and she would answer them. And she started to become really strong in her faith. So it was, like, a very mutual, like, growing,
yeah.
Which was so beautiful. And I remember I was like, okay, I've encountered so many denominations, you know? And I was like, what's holding me back, you know? I remember after college, graduating, I had no job. I was like, what do I do with my life, you know? And some of my Protestant friends were like, come to Denver, you know? Oh, we're going to go to Boulder and, like, meet some people there. And I was like, sure, why not? And, it, you know, by that time, I had met, like, Mormons during that trip and, like, Messianic Jews. And we had this Bible study. And, you know, they were talking about all these things. And at the end, the person who was leading the Bible study was like, you know, during King David time, they would like sing psalms to the tabernacle because they were afraid of being struck by lightning. I was like, that's what you do at Mass. I was like starting to like kind of piece that together. Mm-hmm. And then there's one moment they're talking about Revelation, which I did not understand. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. But the part that really hit me was my friend, who was like such a devout Protestant, she asked this question that was like, so how do I receive, how do we have Jesus on earth? You know, like, how do we have heaven on earth? And I was looking at a bowl of crackers and I was like, oh my goodness, that is the Catholic Church. We have that in Mass, you know? And I was like, wow, this is such a crazy moment to think that, you know, she also wanted that. And I think, like, for me, like, this whole journey, I was just like, you know, I have to, like, explore, you know, all this, get all the details, right. You know, research all the churches. I read so many books. And I was like, wow, we got to this point where it's like, okay, even the devout Protestant is yearning for something more, you know. I was like, that really hit me in a way.
That's beautiful. And I love how it's very profound, right? This sense of inadequacy, this that you felt,
mm-hmm.
right? In some sense, that's a great gift when God allows us to experience that, because in truth, all humans are in that place, right? But sometimes it takes getting to that place of saying, I need a savior, right? I need a God who comes down to my level and lifts me up because I can't do this alone. And when we are able to think of it that way, experience it that way, it's a great gift because it gets us out of our trying to do it on our own, and then we meet with a faith that fits that, you know, mm-hmm. that's so we're right up to the threshold in your story. Yeah. But Kailash, why don't you take us home to the, you know, how does your story, how do you get up to the doors of the church or into the church?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, I was on this incredible thirst for truth, yeah. I think in a factual sense, mm-hmm. and researching and just learning what is the true viability of the Bible, you know, and a lot of these resources were Protestant, but I didn't have a distinction in my head.
Right.
It was just about truth. And the more and more I researched, the more and more I became convinced the description of what sin is explains why I do these things that I do. And this thing that I saw, like on programs like this and others, where people converted and changed their behavior from what I had into something that I looked at as aspirational and good, it was not that Christianity was incidental to their change. It is that Christianity is instrumental in our change. It is the reason that they were able to change their behavior. And I kept a journal at that time, and I've reviewed it because I thought my reasoning would be selfish, or my reasoning for this quest would be self-serving, but it wasn't. And everything I wrote in there was, I need a change. I want this to be done. I want to be different. I want to be something else. And the personal stories I saw from people, which corroborated with this factual truth, was mesmerizing to me. And I wanted to be baptized. You know, I wanted to join a church. And so then I began to research, what is baptism, right? And then an explanation, what are sacraments? And this is around the time that the Catholic Church would start to pop up. Because while the Protestants, I found, were extremely interested in textual analysis or historicity, they really have abandoned like an understanding of the sacraments in an important way. And all these resources were Catholic that I found. And the most important thing, as I became more aware of this concept of a covenant that God created through the Eucharist and how it transcended the Old Testament to the New, everything that I saw from Catholic apologists and people who talked about their conversion, the word that stuck out, the two words that struck out were coherency and conviction. And it was amazing to me that more than anyone else, Catholics could explain the Old Testament and the New in a coherent way, or they could explain anything that happened in history in a coherent way, or a dogma of the church and how it worked was coherent. Everything was coherent.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I mentioned in the beginning, apologetic discussions about these things are important, but that doesn't actually, I think, motivate human behavior to really go to the next level, you know? And the thing that stuck out to me the most about Catholic people was I could see it in their face on whatever program, whatever podcast, whatever it was. They believed with total conviction. And it's not something that could be faked, you know? They didn't have any doubt in what they believed. And that foundation and that certainty that they had was very alluring to me. Because like I said, I was in darkness. And the idea that anyone could have certainty about who they were, about what they would do, about what they believed, about why they were here, you know, all these fundamental questions. If we can't answer those questions, we will always be groping around in darkness, doing nothing, because the foundation of our life doesn't exist. But I could see that if it's true, and I actually could have this firm foundation, then I could do more. You know, I wouldn't be worried about how can I be happy? Why am I here? You know, these fundamental questions that will never go away. And it was just the conviction that they had, the truth and what it did for them interiorly, what it looked like on their face, you know, some kind of almost transfiguration in a way, to believe with certainty. It was extremely magnetizing to me. And I wanted that. But it did not fit in any way with my life that I had at all, you know? And the more I went towards this, the friends I had, which was centered around partying, doing drugs, whatever, it didn't fit. And the relationship I was in at the time absolutely did not fit. And I would try to bring these things up and I would try to make these changes. And so many of these church teachings about contraception, the dignity of who we are as people, were completely antithetical to where my life was. All the way to the point that I was isolated, you know, and the pivotal moment for me was, you know, the person I was with, she moved everything out. She, somewhere along that line, you know, I kind of shared what I remember actually very vividly. I said, you need to become Catholic so you can go to heaven. And that was not acceptable, you know, and she moved out and all the furniture, everything. And the apartment that I lived in San Francisco, I was sleeping on a mattress on the ground. There was nothing else there. I was in another failed startup, didn't work. I had barely enough money, hopefully to make rent, probably not the next month, you know? I was done. I had nowhere to go. And I remember saying to myself in an interior way that I woke up one morning and I said, this is the worst day of my life. I said, this is the absolute worst day of my life. And that probably had happened to me many times, to be honest. I woke up and it was the worst day of my life because some idea didn't work, something I tried didn't work, another relationship failed, whatever. But this time I had something else to say. And I was not Catholic. I was not Christian. I was not baptized. But I knew this truth. And I said to myself, God, on your worst day, you chose me. And on my worst day, I will choose you. The worst day for God in his earthly life is the day of the crucifixion. He was killed for doing nothing wrong. And I knew that as a fact, finally, on that day. And I knew that he had given us the Catholic Church as a vehicle to know him from the time he left to now. And I said, on your worst day, you chose me. And on my worst day, I choose you. And for whatever it meant, every day since then, I have tried to be a better Christian each day. And eventually I found myself in RCIA, and you may not believe this, but the RCIA director that I met was the first Catholic person I met in person.
Wow.
Everything that I studied, everything that I did, was all from online resources. And the change which occurred to me was just because people shared content like this. And later on, I read St. Augustine Confessions. And, you know, his conversion, too, came because he heard a story about people who read about St. Anthony of Egypt, and they converted.
Right.
And there was something about conversion and seeing other people make this change that eventually I could make this change. And I went to the church. I kind of explained everything that I had been through. And I went through RCIA, and I went through the program when I got baptized. And the Catholic faith and the sacraments changed every single thing about me and every single thing about my life. And since then, I've not had a drink of alcohol. I've not done any drugs. I have lived an extremely clean life. I've made, from complete isolation, I've made the best friends I've ever had. From repeat over and over again failure in romantic relationships, I've been able to form an amazing relationship with Lily, you know? And we didn't even kiss until we were married. You know, we were able to bring chastity and purity, these principles, into our relationship. That was impossible for me. And you know, after so many business failures over and over again, the Lord found a way for me to actually use my talents in a way which was actually founded on principles of morality, humility, obedience, you know, these ways that we can actually motivate ourselves to do good.
Right.
And after so many failures, I finally, the first startup I did after I converted worked. Wow. You know, I was the founder of a technology startup in San Francisco, and that was acquired, thanks be to God, a few years ago. Everything fell into place because I was humiliated in such a way that there was no other option than to truly be a Christian person.
Yeah.
And that's where I found myself. At failure again, I had failed so many times, but finally with a coherent way to understand it and to turn to God rather than myself again.
Right. Well, it's again that gift of, you know, God allowing us to experience failure, allowing us to feel inadequate, allowing us to be miserable as a result of sin, you know, missing the mark, sin. So that we can finally be give in and be open to him. And then we recognize that, hey, even all those desires that were twisted, even the desire to do great things, right? Those are all created by God.
Yes.
And we've been fulfilling them in so many unproductive, unfruitful ways. But those were there for a purpose. And now I realize it's for relationship. It's for glorifying God. It's for serving neighbor. But I needed to kind of reach that point of being open to God. So that's just wonderful. And again, as you said, that's the power of story. It's not just, it's the apologetics, it's the reasoning, but then we need to meet someone to see that it actually changes life, that Christ really makes a difference. So we've got about 6 minutes left. Bring these stories together. Where do we want to start here to bring these stories together? How did you guys meet and all that?
Yeah, it's amazing. I was baptized in St. Dominic's Catholic Church in San Francisco, and Lily was baptized there a few years earlier.
Wow.
I think her journey kind of was, she brought it right to the point that she was more certain about the Catholic faith after experiencing what Protestants were missing.
Right.
And we were both baptized in the same church at different times. And then we met actually in church, a different one, for a young adult event.
Nice.
And we met there, and we started as friends, to believe it or not. We did not date immediately, and we always did these faith-related activities, going to Mass, group adoration, whatever it was. And that was what gave us the ability to form a faith-based friendship, I think, which allowed us to get to know each other you know? And yeah. And what's so funny and what's so curious is we were not at all who we thought we would be with, you know? What you write down on this piece of paper of what you want,
yeah.
And God has such a much, much better plan.
Yeah.
And what we found just by going to church together and getting to know each other was that our conversions really profoundly changed both of us as individuals.
Yeah.
And I think we both knew that we lived lives exclusively centered around God and the Catholic Church. And that's what we wanted to have together.
Yeah. I think to add on to that, mm-hmm. like the event we went to was Holy Hour, Happy Hour, you know? Ooh, it was nice. Really the Eucharist who brought us together,
yeah.
you know? And it was the Eucharist that sustained our relationship. We had a long distance relationship, you know, coast to coast. And, you know, we would have adoration dates. Like, God really brought us together. And God really shared his love mm-hmm. for us in such profound ways, like through our failures, through our mistakes, through what our sense of unworthiness was. And he really loved us in our imperfections. Like, I feel like we could come to God just as we were, you know, and to really experience that profound love that surpasses all understanding, you know. Yeah. And I think through our marriage, we're able to kind of, you know, even grow deeper in that relationship with God.
Yeah.
So
I love seeing the Eucharist at the center of that. Again, thinking of the different themes that come up in the stories, right? The Eucharist is this preeminent way of this place of certainty. Where God, I know, I mean, God's always with us. God, we're two or more gathered. Like, there's all sorts of ways we approach God, and he's present to us. But he's given us this place of particular certainty. We can approach him. He comes to be near to us. And also, because the Eucharist, again, its connection with the cross, right? That when we want to know, like, where is happiness? What does it mean to be a man or a woman? What does it mean to be a relationship? We look to the cross. It's self-sacrifice. It's the self-gift to others. And so the Eucharist really brings all that together in one. Oh, wonderful. Well, we have just a few minutes left. I mean, would either of you, if there's somebody who's listening or watching who was coming from one of these places that you're coming from, what's a word of encouragement you'd give them in terms of a next step that they could go?
Yeah, you know, I think the image of the cross is incredibly important because, you know, for me personally, my family has rejected this mm-hmm. completely. You know, our faith, their faith, their relationship with God, that doesn't work with this,
right.
you know? Mm-hmm. And I experienced a profound humiliation where I had nowhere else to turn. And my mind was made in such a way that I couldn't go back the way I came. It wasn't going to work. And I'm certainly sensitive for others where perhaps your challenge isn't as acute. And you believe that the way you came could work. But I would tell anyone that if you allow the Lord to transform your life through the Catholic Church, you won't regret it at all. And I think there are so many examples of that, maybe in your personal life, maybe through content you've seen on this program or others, or through great, great saints in history, that every question you have about historicity, authority, any apologetic question, it's going to be answered if you just give it the chance. The hardest thing is going to church. The hardest thing is actually going physically to a Catholic church and allowing yourself to attend and allowing yourself to go through RCIA, whatever it is that you need to do. I can tell you from the other side, I would do it 1,000 times. I would do it 10,000 times. Whatever it took to actually be in full communion. And for me, maybe other people in my generation who are born without any Christianity, without any moral compass, you wouldn't believe the life you can live in the light of Christ, that you can stop your self-destructive habits
yeah.
right in place.
Yeah.
I know you can with the grace of God.
Amen. Well, thank you guys. Thank you so much for sharing your stories and congratulations on your marriage. And we're praying for you. And again, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Journey Home program. I know this story will impact very many. I want to remind you that if you go to chnetwork.org, you can find many stories like Kailash and Lily's. And again, we're reminded in your stories about the importance of story, right? That we need to ask the question, what impact has Christ had on my life? what difference does Christ make? And if you're not sure what that is, well, go talk to someone who's been changed. You know, ask them. Interrogate their story a little bit and see what comes out. So know that we're praying for you. Please be praying for us. We'll be back again next week here in the Journey Home program. God bless you.